We go and grab a quick bite.
We watch a movie, then fight.
We're the Fast Food Film Friends.
You're listening to Fast Food Film Friends, the show where two friends get fired up about films, festivals, furries, fascinating facts, Fleetwood Mac, and feud while they finish some food.
This week we'll be talking about not one, but two brand new documentaries about the notorious 2017 Fire Festival. The first of which is called Fire, which is now streaming on Netflix, and the second is Fire Fraud, which is available on Hulu. And to go along with that heated matchup, we'll be eating Red Robin's Fiery Ghost Tavern Double Burger.
Ooh, fiery. I will say the names of the two documentaries there, I think, are very apt, and we'll touch on that later. From IMDb, the plot summary of Netflix's Fire reads as follows, an exclusive behind-the-scenes look at the infamous unraveling of the Fire Music Festival.
And the plot summary of Hulu's Fire Fraud reads as follows. Concert promoters and rapper Ja Rule advertise a high-end festival experience that fails spectacularly when they don't plan for the infrastructure to support the venue, artists, and guests.
Man, it sure does. And from RedRobin.com, the Fiery Ghost Tavern Double Burger contains fiery ghost pepper sauce, pepper jack cheese, fried jalapeno coins. I've never heard that description.
I'm not sure of the monetary value of these.
Neither am I, but I think we should start using them. Fresh jalapenos as well, lettuce, tomatoes, and two perfectly seasoned fire-grilled patties.
And for today's episode, Kevin and I will also be joined by a very special guest who will be chowing down on these burgers with us. Please welcome to the show the 2019 college football national champions, the Clemson Tigers.
Clemson Tigers!
Did you forget to call them?
Did you not send the
that
bus?
That was definitely your job.
I called them, but did you send the bus?
Okay, we should definitely. We'll cut that out.
I don't think we have the infrastructure anyways to have all of them here.
Now, the attendees of Fire Festival paid top dollar,
yes,
expecting, you know, a weekend of pure luxury,
mm-hmm,
only to be deeply disappointed with their experience. So you and I thought, you know, if we're going to do this right, let's,
yep,
run by our favorite gourmet burger joint, each spend upwards of $9,
yeah,
and receive some pain and suffering in return.
That's right.
The difference is that you and I know full well what we're getting ourselves into.
I think we knew slightly more than Firefest attendees, just a little bit more. But I still am relatively new to Red Robin, so to me this was a brand new experience. I didn't know what to expect, and so I did overpay.
Can I ask do you know the exact dollar amount that you shelled out for these?
These were $8.99 a pop. I did get one free cup of fries as well from this lady while I was waiting in the to-go waiting area, which is basically just the entryway, getting some strange stares.
So when you dine in at Red Robin, the fries are bottomless, but Kevin and I are very strict about, you know, taking our orders to go.
Yep.
They have like weird policies about not letting people eat in their thongs, which,
yeah,
like is a kind of a deal breaker for Kevin and I.
It is.
So these two documentaries were released within a few days of one another.
Yeah.
And
I love that Hulu was so catty to edge theirs in right,
right,
before Netflix.
So Netflix had announced theirs beforehand.
Yeah.
Hulu like surprise dropped theirs.
Yes.
And I think we're going to get into,
oof,
kind of the strategy behind that and if we think that was the best way to do it. But
yep,
basically, nobody has time to watch both of these, you know. And everybody's thinking, oh, you know, there's two of them. I don't know which one to check out.
No.
But you and I, of course, have ample, you know,
ample
resources
time.
and the time to do so. And so we set out to determine which one is best.
We want to tell the people. We don't want you to waste your time, you know.
Right.
To the
Let
five,
us waste
people.
Ours.
Let us waste ours.
On behalf of you.
Let us eat some food that we'll also waste our time doing. And you can make your choices from that. We want to educate the world about which one of these Firefest films they should watch.
So before we do that, Kevin, I got a question for you.
Yeah.
Does it Nutella?
I don't know, Nathan. Does it?
Does it Nutella?
Does It Nutella is the part of the show where we pick a random food item, dip it in that famous hazelnut spread, and answer the age-old question, does it Nutella?
That's right, Nathan. And today, the items that we will be dipping in this jar of chocolatey, hazelnutty goodness are carrots.
Now, Wikipedia describes a carrot as a root vegetable, usually orange in color. Kevin and I have cut a carrot in half.
I actually just broke it with my hands.
Ooh, wow, this is a clean break.
Yeah, thank you.
And we are going to dip our veggies.
They're not baby carrots, I want to make that clear. We have full size.
These are adult. These may be senile carrots for all I know.
They are definitely retired.
I'm going to get a lot of,
wow,
Nutella.
You know what? I guess maybe I should get a little more too. All right?
All right, so our carrots are slathered in Nutella.
Yeah. Ready?
I'm ready.
Mm.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah, pretty good, actually.
Yeah, for sure.
Shockingly good.
So should we bust into these burgers?
Let's bust into them. I'm fired up.
So let's open these up.
Let's. Now, I have to say, Red Robin's to-go containers are very serious.
Yeah, I mean, this is like a... It's presented pretty nicely. You got your fries on one side. I'd say it's like a... I mean, these are like thicker, you know, like some really potato-y fries. And so you get like an all right amount of those. Like, it's about the mass you would get in like a medium fry, like a normal fast food.
I will say I'm very surprised that when I saw this, when they came out, I was very surprised that I still had two full orders of fries, because I thought the cup she gave me of fries while I was waiting would have stripped away the fries that were included in my meal.
You thought she, like, reached into our to-go containers to give you those fries.
I thought she was just giving me those fries to tide me over while I waited, and then I would not get additional fries with my burger. But you did inform me that I was unaware that they usually do unlimited bottomless fries. So that I feel a lot less special.
You are. Well, now, the burgers are mostly wrapped in, like a nice silver...
It's called tinfoil. That's what that's called.
And then they're
silver magic paper.
They're poking out one of the ends.
It's a very nice presentation. Ketchup guy?
Yeah, I'm a big ketchup guy. My fiance actually gives me a very hard time because
it's terrible for you.
She is a cultured mustard aficionado.
Ooh, I'm much more
who
a mustard person.
Cannot stand ketchup. And I like mustard, of course. I like lots of different mustards, but I mean, at the end of the day, when it comes to fries, ketchup is my guy.
Really should just bring a garbage can out here.
It's the only exercise we get.
Just throwing to the garbage can. All right, so I'm looking at a picture of this burger online that they presented as. And I will say, visually, it looks pretty spot on.
Yeah, it really does.
Like, I'm very impressed. You think the perfectly placed, what are they called? Chips? Coins.
The coins, yeah.
Perfectly placed jalapeno coins wouldn't look so nicely put together, but they do.
Yeah, this actually is, like I said, their presentation is definitely their strong suit.
Are you nervous that this is going to be, like, really hot?
I really don't know what to expect. Based on the name and, you know, the ingredients, I'm thinking this is going to give me a kick.
We bought our tickets. We're on the plane right now. So excited to get to Firefest. Now let's land this plane.
Let's go pop some Molly.
There's some heat.
There is.
The fresh jollies on the bottom. Whew.
The sauce, the ghost pepper sauce is...
Not playing around.
It's staying with me.
One of my coins fell out. Could use a coin purse. That is probably far and away the spiciest fast food item I've ever eaten.
This is hot. These jalapeno coins are good. I'm curious if they sell these as like an appetizer.
I would buy them. Oh, man.
They're tasty. See, I'm about to get a nice big bite of some of that raw pino on that bottom layer.
Man, I'm telling you, my first bite was strictly, basically raw jollies, and it is hot. They're fresh, they're not de-seeded, plenty of seeds, and there's a ton of them on the bottom of this burger. My nose is running.
Let's keep going.
Yeah, let's go. I mean, it's very good. I mean, I think the actual quality of the burgers is pretty meh.
But yeah, they're... Pretty thin,
yeah.
Not very flavorful burgers, I would say.
Yep.
For a, you know, a self-proclaimed gourmet burger joint.
Yeah.
That's a little disappointing, but...
It is.
It's just like it's a good concoction.
Yeah, everything, everything around the burgers is...
It works pretty well.
It does. I'd say the cacophony of condiments around it are amazing.
Mm. This is why we keep thesaurus.com open on our computers.
This is, actually, you know what? I use that term because in the movie, one of the movies, there's a quote... about the cacophony of noise they've made on social media to get this festival blown up to the point where it was huge.
It's comparable.
I don't know. I'm getting like heartburn from this spice.
I'm ready to keep chowing. I'm trying to push myself to my limits.
I need some milk. Oh, are we allowed to take some jollies off?
You can get your jollies off.
Well, I always do every ep. I'm like, my mouth is burning. Literally every surface in my mouth is hot.
Yeah, it's coated.
It's hot. Sinuses have not been this clear my entire life. Did not expect... You know, there's a lot of fast food items like the fiery Doritos Locos Tacos. There's all the spicy burgers that places come out with. And they're always a letdown in terms of spice level. Always. They're never as spicy as you would think. You're never like this. You're never sweating, sniffling, eyes watering, mouth burning, hot.
Well, I think that it's a liability. You know what I mean? Like,
true.
They don't want to serve something to people that's going to like genuinely have a lasting effect, because customers are going to get angry. Anybody who's like seriously into very spicy food, it's probably not going to fast food to satisfy that itch. But this is very spicy.
I'm fired up from it. I want to. It's almost too spicy.
So if you're listening to this and you know very little about the true story of Fyre Festival, it's going to be hard for us to talk about this without like kind of touching on parts of the story. And so I think if anybody listening to this doesn't know much about the story and wants to go into one of these documentaries blind, right off the bat, you and I should give our recommendations on, if you're interested in this, you want to watch them. Would you recommend one of these documentaries over the other? Would you say both or neither?
I think I would recommend one over the other, and I'll get to that. I think these movies complement each other very well.
Mm-hmm.
They obviously are both covering the same event. However, I think one takes... My personal preference was for the Hulu one, which was Fyre Fraud, I believe is what it's called, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was much more investigatory. It was much more about the founder, kind of other businesses he's held, how it all came to be, and not so much... the actual event or aftermath. It was a lot more in the buildup and how things went so wrong. And I thought they did a very good job. I also like that they have the founder actually included in the Hulu one.
They do.
Which I thought was a very sneaky play by them to kind of beat out Netflix in a way. I think the Netflix one focuses a lot more on the actual festival, the operations side of it, people who were much more directly involved with actually setting things up and trying to get things going. And I think, like I said, it's very complimentary to the Hulu one, but I found the Hulu one a little more interesting. However, if you have time, I think these are both very good films.
Both worth watching.
Both worth watching. I think if you're only going to watch one, I would push for Hulu. It's more of like almost like a true crime format, like a Making a Murderer type format, I feel like. And the Netflix one is a little more mainstream documentary, I guess. I don't know. It's hard to describe.
Yeah, I would say I think they're both pretty well-made movies, and I actually personally prefer the Netflix one.
Mm.
And I think that, like you're saying, like they have different pros and cons. Like it kind of depends on what you're looking for.
Yep.
To me, the Hulu one painted a much more broad picture about how where we're at in society has led us to something like this, where the Netflix one is more so concerned with talking to the people who are like closest to Billy, both in his company and in the festival, and getting like a very first-hand perspective from lots of different people.
Yes, absolutely.
And so my personal recommendation is, I think the Netflix one is definitely worth checking out. And if you're still interested in this, if you want to know more, the Hulu one definitely covers a lot of different ground. Like there obviously is a fair amount of stuff that they both go over. Mm-hmm. So there's some overlap, but they are pretty different. Like they're out to tell different stories, to answer different questions.
I think that's absolutely true. I think the reason I liked the Hulu one, and a big part of this which weighed on my head while I was watching the Netflix one, was if I had watched the Netflix one first, would I have liked that one better?
Mm-hmm.
Because you're right, the Hulu one does paint a much broader picture and is much more about how an event like this could come to fruition in our society, you know, social media and its influence, how quickly something like this can blow up, and if people aren't prepared, how terribly wrong it can go.
Right, and you mentioned... The Hulu one has an interview with Billy McFarland, who's the guy who started this festival.
Mm-hmm.
And there's actually that's part of like the controversy surrounding these movies, is that the filmmakers of the Hulu documentary paid him a lot of money to be featured in this movie, which is like, you know, this guy's a scam artist. This guy like hurt a lot of people, and so is enriching him a good thing to support? On the other hand, something else to consider, the Netflix documentary is produced in part by Jerry Media, who's the company who promoted this festival. Yeah. And so both of them are kind of like...
They're both
ethically compromised.
Yes.
Like both these documentaries have things to consider. Like, and I definitely think that each documentary kind of focuses on different people who are involved more. Mm-hmm. I think that the Netflix one kind of puts a little bit less blame on the marketing of the event. Which,
agree.
Of course, because the company that did the marketing is involved.
I think the Hulu one even gets a little jab in at the end, kind of.
Yeah.
I mean... To say to Netflix, like, hey, you're using somebody who's just as much to blame at this. Without Jerry Media promoting and marketing this festival,
it would never have
been as big as it was.
Wouldn't have taken off.
Yeah.
So for anyone who doesn't really know what this story is, basically in 2017, there was a music festival that was supposed to take place in the Bahamas.
Yep.
Billy McFarland was the founder of Fyre Media.
25-year-old
Yeah, just a young, snake charismatic, you know, a Silicon Valley, the kind of guy who could walk into a room and get millions of dollars in funding.
Somebody described him as the biggest used car salesman in the world, and he really wanted to sell you a car.
Yeah, and he partnered with rapper Ja Rule to put together this festival, which is promoting their app called Fire, which is for talent booking. And the festival is going to be like bigger than Coachella, bigger than Burning Man.
The
like
new Coachella.
Like it would be like the most memorable experience ever. You know, like Woodstock.
Yep.
Like just it'd be the kind of thing people would go to, and it would just go down in history.
Celebrities. Everyone's going to be there.
He marketed to the people who want part of that life. You know, the fame and money. Like this is a can't miss opportunity. Obviously, you know, the whole festival ended up being a massive failure and let a lot of people down.
Yes.
But
in a bit, not like a just like a low turnout, unfortunate incident. Like it was a complete failure.
Right.
Absolute failure.
And like the people who went to the festival, their tweets and Instagram posts kind of went viral at the time because that's how everybody learned about this. Was like, look how ridiculous this is.
That cheese sandwich tweet.
Right. So the Hulu documentary has this interview with Billy McFarland. And I feel like that interview doesn't really give us much of a glimpse into like the truth behind this. What it does is it like it paints a picture of Billy, like watching him answer these questions with complete bullshit answers.
Absolute bullshit, the whole movie.
What it tells you about him, but it doesn't tell you about the events.
I think they knew that though going into it. I think hiring him, paying him to come on, you know he's not going to be like, yeah, I fucked up. Totally my fault. Like, he's still selling. Yeah. And it's every answer he gives is bullshit. There's one point where he literally tells him to call him out. He's like, oh, I haven't said anything untrue today. Like, he's like, tell me what I said. Tell me what I said. And the guy's like, this.
And he's like, he just has no response.
And he's like, I'm going to take a personal break. And they're like, what? Because of the question? He's like, no, it's just a personal break. I need like 10 minutes. And it's like, he's just such a bullshitter. And he doesn't even seem that good at it. I think, I don't know what it is. Like, he just pays the right people.
I feel like in retrospect, after having seen how this event was a failure, it's easy to like watch him talk and think like, oh, this guy's a pathological liar.
Yeah.
But like, before this happened, I mean, the guy, like I said, he can work a room. Like, he's very good at what he does.
As he is
just, you know, he started out a very privileged upper class kid, and he worked his way up from there through various schemes.
Like literally,
he just kept failing his way up. Like
he'd have a failure of one of his scams or schemes, whatever you refer to, and then he would use the upfront funds from his next scam to pay out like whatever money was owed from his previous scam, and he just kept building on all of these scams. He built an entire career. I love that you just put a french fry in your mouth and then took it out because you didn't want to bite while I was talking. You had 3 inches of french fry solidly in your mouth. Oh, that was phenomenal. But he keeps building on these schemes and just, oh yeah, you know, invest in this new one. My last one worked out, right? And then people would invest in this new one. He'd use that money to pay off the old one. And he just does it his whole life. And the Firefest was just another step. It was another scheme that he was going to do the exact same thing for. It was get funds, plan it later, figure out the details later, get those funds first. And he's good at getting people to invest in ideas that have almost no details around them. It's like, it's a festival. It's an experience. It's like a PowerPoint with 200 slides that just say like random buzzwords. And that's what people are investing in. It's insane.
There's a moment in the Netflix documentary where there's like a behind the scenes footage of him talking about this festival with some of the models who helped promote it. And he said, the exact quote is, we're selling a pipe dream to your average loser.
Yeah.
Like
living in your parents'
He's
basement.
Well aware that what he's doing is selling an idea. And it's very, very vague because there was this video advertisement that was filmed in the Bahamas with some of the world's biggest models.
Yeah.
They put tons and tons of money, probably hundreds of thousands or maybe millions of dollars into this ad.
Yeah.
And that was the only real promotion.
It literally was.
For this.
They even say like later on, people who had bought their tickets are like, we haven't seen any new footage for like the marketing. It's all from that same video. Like this seems a little weird.
And it literally like, it looks like it could have been like stock footage of beaches and stuff. But like,
and I mean, it basically, they weren't even on like the same island that the festival was going to be on. There was no connection. It was just, hey, supermodels on a boat on some islands. Here's like some pigs swimming around us. And that's the one video that they marketed this whole festival with. That and a fucking orange square.
Right.
Like, and that's...
I consider myself like a fairly skeptical person, but I feel like after watching these, I'm only more wary of like the marketing and the like the people around me. Like this is the kind of thing that everybody who got hustled by the scheme just like wanted to be a part of this experience in some way, whether it was from like the planning side of things or the attending side.
Yep.
And again, the Netflix documentary has a lot of really good interviews with the people who were taking part in the planning, who of course now are like, they're basically trying to clear their names. They're saying like, look, I played a big part in making this happen, but it was not for the wrong reasons. Like there was no agenda behind this. To me, the Hulu documentary actually spends quite a bit of time trying to make you empathize with the festival goers. Yep. Like it shows you more of that experience of like the people who went to this festival. There's a lot of like footage, I'm assuming, that was found on like YouTube and Instagram of people being like, hey, we're here, this is a disaster. And so I think a big part of why this event became such a big deal in the first place is because of how fun it is for a lot of people to laugh at rich people getting hustled.
I mean, I think the reason this went so viral when it did, when people started posting like, hey, we're on this island and look, we're supposed to sleep in these empty tents, like mattresses are wet, there's no food. It was jarring. Like the footage and stuff that was being posted was jarring. You were honestly like, I would be concerned if I was in that situation. But because it's these people who shilled out thousands, I mean, there were some packages that were $250,000 that you could buy to this festival. And it was all, you know, your typical, I don't want to say typical, but you know, it's, when you think of the Coachella crowd, people who have a lot of money, who have access to whether it's Instagram influencers or things like that. But it's the type of people who subconsciously, I think everyone is like, oh God, those fucking yuppie, like pieces of shit who don't do anything except like go take Molly and go to festivals. And it's that mentality of thinking like, ah, ha, ha, look at them. They finally get to experience like real life. Like it's not a fucking dreamland for them every second.
And I think the Hulu doc kind of mentions how like there's some kids who went to this who are not like filthy rich kids. Like there's kids who spent their life savings to go to this thing. Yeah. And it's like, yeah, maybe they just have really, really poor money management, but it's still people who got screwed out of a lot.
Yeah.
Like it's not just that, again, we can look at them and say, oh, like, You were in for it. Like you should have expected this kind of thing. But nobody should expect that. Like no event should ever like you never buy a ticket for something expecting that it might be a complete disaster.
I agree. But to you know, when you're spending as much money as people did on this festival, it's like at least wait until you get like an actual picture of where you're staying, or you know, instead of like sketches and just one YouTube video.
Well, and in the Hulu doc, there's like, it's showing all these wire transfers happening. And I'm like, people are sending millions of dollars based on the fact that Billy sounds confident.
And that's, and it's like, and he keeps needing more money, obviously, because he hasn't gotten enough to pull off this extravagant festival that he's promised everyone. So he keeps needing more money. So he's like, oh, you know what? Instead of using cash at this event, we're going to use these bracelets. So send, like, you're going to want to put at least like $3,000 a day on this bracelet. And people, he raised like $2 million from that idea alone in like a day to keep this scam going on. And that's like, he keeps doing things like that to just pay off. Oh,
And see, and the bracelet thing, there actually are some festivals that work like that. Yeah. And so it sounds kind of legit. And it was, I think he said 300 a day, but still it's like, what on earth do you need $300 per day at this festival for?
Well,
like
how much is food cost? Bottled water goes for $30 a bottle. So
I also did like the Billy, when he's like digging himself the biggest hole of debt, they spend $2 million on alcohol. Have to pay a 45% tax on that alcohol.
They have to, the duty to get it through the Bahamas Customs is 45%, which it's is like $900,000.
It's kind of like they already knew it was not going to be a good festival, and they're like, well, at least people are going to be wasted and just have a good time.
And my favorite part is like when once people get there, it's like there's just pallets of booze sitting around. $2 million worth of booze.
I mean, it really is like seeing the firsthand footage. It's like a post-apocalyptic thing.
It is.
And like in the Hulu doc, there's a whole portion about there's a group of people waiting to leave on the plane.
Yeah.
And the plane takes hours and hours and hours to leave. And like,
well,
we can watch that now and think like, oh man, that's just kind of crazy. But imagine being there. Like, imagine being stuck in a different country with little food or water.
Yep.
Nothing you expected to be here is there. And the plane is taking like 8 hours to leave. Like, you would start freaking out.
You would. And like, they literally locked them in because it's a tiny airport. I mean, it's not meant for this many people on this island. Tiny airport where like the fuel trucks and everything are right outside. So they can't have these people who are on like drugs or smoking cigarettes out wandering around. So they literally lock them in the airport without food or water. And it is scary. It's a scary event. Like, even if you get there, these tents that they had set up for these people were, you couldn't lock anything in there. Anybody could walk into your tent at any point.
Yeah.
It's, you're totally exposed. Like, your valuables are totally exposed. What would you do? The hotels are all booked because this fucking idiot planned this festival for the busiest weekend of the year on this island when there's a huge worldwide sailing regatta. And he didn't even think to, like, check. He didn't even think about when he was scheduling this huge event.
It was, multi-million dollar event. The best example of how little care he or the event planners really put into this. Because, like, they could have done it any other weekend of the year, and it would have at least gone a little bit better.
They could have had hotels. Like, every hotel has been booked years in advance for this regatta. And it's like, that's, you're exactly right. He didn't think anything through. Put no time into it.
So before we really get into more details and spoilers about these documentaries, let's give a verdict on the Fiery Ghost Tavern Double Burgers from Red Robin. I would personally say this was a fun thing to eat just to see, you know, see how spicy it is.
Yeah.
I'm never going to order this again. This isn't something that I want to eat and then, like, go about my day.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And
I can, my stomach hurts.
As for the documentaries, I preferred Netflix. You preferred the Hulu one.
Mm-hmm. I mean, again, though, I think they're so complimentary. I think once you watch one, it's strange to me because I thought I had a pretty good grasp about this festival and everything that went wrong. And there's so much info in both of these that it is honestly super intriguing, almost fascinating. Like, I took the most notes on any film that we've ever done for this podcast on these because I was just like, what? How the hell does he get, like, an oil tycoon to invest in this? And it's like, oh, he had a fucking metal credit card. And it was just like, boom, here's... Like, it's so fascinating to me. And I honestly think both of these are worth watching. I like the Hulu one a little more, yes. But I think it's going to be hard for people to watch one without watching the other.
Yeah, and they're both worth watching.
I think they are. So before we move into our spoiler section of the show, let's hear a quick word from our sponsor.
Fast Food Film Friends is brought to you by the 2019 Fire Festival. Because fuck you.
And we're back. We're ready for the spoiler section of our show where we will spoil both of these movies today. We've got two to spoil, so there'll be no shortage of spoilers while we also enjoy a lovely snack. And as I was very well prepared for today, our snack will be some Kirkland Signature Organic Applesauce Pouches that we're going to be giving a shot.
These are the kinds that you are supposed to inject directly into your femoral artery?
Correct.
And so we'll be doing that. Let's crack these bad boys open.
Now, Nathan, what percentage of your food would you say is sucked from a pouch in your daily diet?
I'm looking this tube in the eye, and it looks used.
I think if it fits comfortably in a nostril, I think you're supposed to actually just get those sinuses clogged up after the ghost pepper clears them out.
Let's just get one big swig.
I could probably clean this thing out in one big swig, in all honesty. If you give it a fist-like grab, it will shoot down your throat. So quickly, it's like a paint stick. I squeezed too much. My mouth was so full.
Ooh. Gavin just tried talking, and half of the applesauce came shooting out of his mouth.
Bubbled
over. The microphone is covered.
Well, at least we got the applesauce proof one.
Mm. Oh, okay, here's the thing. Mm. I generally enjoy applesauce very much. This is so fine. Like, there's so little texture to this because it's specifically made for feeding newborns.
It is not it's classic applesauce, thank you very much.
It's just gooey.
That's what apple... It's a sauce. It's... Have you...
Yeah, think, I've had applesauce many times before.
I feel like you're confusing it with, like, apple pie filling or...
No, that's the thing. This is actually closer to, like, a cold apple pie filling goo than it is to how applesauce usually is, in my opinion.
I have no idea what you're talking about. This is... Standard applesauce.
I'm done.
I think
with...
it's because it's shooting out of a tube into your mouth that's throwing you. I think normally you're eating it with a spoon. You get a little metal in your mouth. It's a whole different experience. I think that's what's throwing you off. Texture-wise, if I were to blind taste test you with, like, some Mott's applesauce out of a cup and this stuff, if I squirted it into a cup, you would not be able to tell the difference.
I gladly take that challenge because I guarantee it would be.
Let's fucking go. Let's go get some Mott's right now. Let's get some Tots too because I'm a little hungry.
And you know what? Let's just finish off with some Dippin' Dots.
Mmm. It's a lovely thought.
So I just want to, like, talk about some moments from these documentaries that we enjoyed. I really liked in the Netflix one, if we want to start there.
I'd rather start at the Hulu one, but sure.
There's a handful of really good, you know, interview quotes. And there's a part where somebody tells a story about how they, came to Billy with a problem, and his response was, "We're not a problems-focused group. We're a solutions-oriented group."
Yes.
And, like, that's how we got here.
Yeah.
Is because he's literally thinking, like, we have enough problems as it is. Please do not bring me new problems. Because if I just, like, plug my ears and shut my eyes, we can get through this.
Yeah.
I don't want to know about the logistics. Because this guy has lived his entire life.
Never having to get to the details, I feel
like. Well, because he does things. Because he has these master plans that end up failing. They end up just being get-rich-quick schemes, but then he bounces back. And so he's not even concerned about the success of it. All he cares about is the idea of it. Like, he just wants to keep moving.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's going to jail for, you know, a relatively short amount of time, considering how many people that he scammed.
Yeah.
Like, there's people who were caught with marijuana and are going to jail for much longer than this guy is for...
Literally.
Losing millions of people's dollars.
Yeah. Millions, people's millions of dollars. I don't think
it was the apostrophe
millions,
was
millions of people
was after the S there.
Oh, okay. Okay. I think, you know, there's so much unbelievable shit in this. Like, there's so many parts where you're just like, how do they continue? How do they continue with, like, people raising these red flags? Like, I feel like everyone in the Netflix one specifically, because I feel like it's a lot more operations oriented in terms of the actual setup. It's like all the industry regs who were involved were basically saying, like, this isn't going to work. There's not enough time. And it's just that Billy would throw more money at them and say, keep going, keep going, keep going, keep going, keep going. And it's another quote that I liked was when they were meeting with somebody, one of the suppliers for some part of the festival. I don't even remember what it was. But they were like, yeah, I remember thinking that they were either full of shit or the smartest guys in the room.
That like, general sentiment is said by probably four or five people in these two documentaries.
Yep.
And it's because nobody wants to tell the emperor he has no clothes. No one wants to be the person to be like, by the way, this is not going to happen. Because it just seems like such a grand plan with so many great people involved that, like, everyone who saw the red flags and thought this isn't going to work, they're like, am I the one who's just not seeing this fully?
Yeah.
Like, I must be wrong if everybody else is working so hard to make this happen. Because, like, the reason why the festival got to the point of being a disaster is because it involved a lot of people who are really good at their job. Like, if this just involved a bunch of people who were just, like, didn't know what they were doing and were clueless, it never would have gotten anywhere near the point that it did.
Well, that's, and I think Billy, even in the Hulu one, says, like, so many things had to go so right before so many things could go so wrong. And it's true. Like, they had a phenomenal marketing team on this.
Mm-hmm.
They had people who were trying to make these insanely tight timelines work and were working 18-hour days for months trying to get this done. They had labor that was doing the same thing, working incredibly long hours, nonstop, trying to get this set up. And it's like, things just kept going just right enough that the next, it would trigger the next thing, and like dominoes, just everything kept moving. But it's like, day of, or like the week before, it's like, you have to look around and know that this isn't going to work.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, somebody at one point says, like, Billy, you can't have people come. And it's kind of the same thing, like, we're solutions-oriented. Like, you can leave. He would let people leave because they knew it wasn't going to work.
Yeah.
But then he was like, you can leave, sure, but we are going to keep doing this.
And, like, if the festival had just been outright canceled, even just a day or two before it happened, this would not have been such a massive story that gets documentaries made about it. But because they let it go on, like, he has so little foresight. Like, they tried doing this whole thing in, like, 4 months. All these experts kept telling him, they're like, this will take you years to get the infrastructure for something like this.
Well, it's amazing that, like, you know, all those regulars are saying that, and it's still, you know, if you don't look at how much of a mess it was when people actually got there, in terms of, like, ticket sales and hype for a first music festival, it was incredibly successful. They sold out. They made a ton of money. It's just they didn't have anything actually in place to have a festival.
Right.
But it's just, you know, so much was... I really like the Billy quote, that so much had to go so right before so much could go so wrong. And it's like, you think he almost was just waiting for it to fail much earlier? Like, for somebody to be like, this is not going to work, we need to stop.
Like, yeah, it's like, stop. It's like the closer it got, he just felt like, we've made it this far, this has to work, it's to work. And he constantly is, like, putting out fires, as he describes it. Like, every single day, he's getting calls about, like, they're like, you owe $2 million for this. And he's like, all right, let me figure something out.
He's
going back to investors. And there's, like, the woman who's putting many millions of dollars into this. I forget her name, but she was screwed out of millions and millions of dollars.
Yeah. A lot of people were.
The Netflix doc definitely shows how Grant, who's like Billy's right-hand man, what a role he played in it. Because this guy is just clueless.
Lunatic.
And he's just like firing people, like making these huge decisions left and right based off of like no pretext.
He made a 152-page PowerPoint.
the presentation deck, and it was just like single words on, like, images.
Inspiring. Experience. And then somebody's like, yeah, and he just, at the end of it, like, he ran out of time and was just clicking through, like, all of these ridiculous slides. But then he also writes, what was it? His 5,000-word essay on how the video should be scored.
And, like, in the movie, you see just scrolling through pages and pages and pages of details.
Of the most arbitrary, random, like, input.
Like, he wants, like, five different styles of music combined into one. He was responsible for orchestrating so much of this. He got off with a $35,000 penalty. Like, he's going to be fine.
It's insane to me. Because he was so... None of them are, like, grounded in reality. And I think that's what really let them get so far, is that they've all lived lives of luxury their whole life, where they say, we want this done, here's money. All you kind of underlings, get this done for us, please. Make this happen. Oh, it's not going to happen, here's more money. Continue to make it happen.
Yeah, and they don't understand consequences.
They don't get that... There's lead times for materials. There's labor that you can't just have people working nonstop for months. Like, and there's legal issues. It's none of them have any experience in actually doing anything other than selling ideas to rich people and then moving on to the next idea. That's what their whole careers have been. And it's like when they needed to actually plan stuff, all of them, I feel like they were like, well, we'll go to an island and like party for a week and then kind of figure it out there.
And Billy is in his late 20s, has like a 6-year prison sentence. Like, this guy's going to come out and just be doing more of this stuff. Like, he's just going to scheme more people.
I hope he fucking pairs with Ja Rule, because watching Ja Rule bomb every interview about this festival was one of my favorite parts of these movies. Like, people would ask him, like, so Ja, tell us about what fire is. And he would just, like, fucking puke out of his mouth, basically. Like, it was so bad.
I'm rich and famous, and this is my app.
It's like, oh yeah, oh, the app.
Well, see, and the Netflix doc spends a lot of time talking to people who are working their butts off for this startup. Like, this app, they, like, very talented people are putting so much effort into this, and their app is really unrelated to the festival, which is a promotional event for the app.
Well, that's
their work is down the toilet because of this.
Yeah, absolutely. That app is not viable ever. It's really funny, because after watching the Hulu one, you don't, and even, I think a lot of people don't know this, in general, but even after watching the Hulu one, I still didn't really realize it, that the app was there, and the Fyre Fest was just kind of like an idea Billy came up with and then got like kind of obsessed with to promote this app. But I think a lot of people think like the Fyre Fest was there first, and then they realized they could make an app off the hype. But the app is the origin of it all, I guess.
Yeah. And it's a good idea for an app that I'm sure if it's run by people who know what they're doing, it could be a successful company.
Well, it's And one thing I found hilarious is I was scrolling Instagram, and Kevin from The Office comes up, and it's a video, and he's like, hey, check me out on Cameo. It's this new super cool app. And I was like, holy shit, this kind of sounds like Fyre. And it's literally an app where you can pay a celebrity like him. I was just looking it up. Tommy Chong's on here. Adrian Grenier from Entourage. Bella Thorne. There's like big celebrities. You can pay like 100, it ranges from like 10 bucks to like $300 to get a personalized video from one of these people to say like happy birthday to your friend, or like, hey, save the date for our wedding on this date. Anything. You can get them to say literally anything. And it's just like so sad to me, because a lot of these people are like kind of washed up celebrities or not really big celebrities yet.
Like nobody who's actually like an A-list star is an
A-list. Adrian Grenier's an A-list star, man. I'm telling you. There's some big, Tommy Chong was once. Sean Astin, Drake Bell, Perez Hilton. He's only $27. So, but it's, I don't know, the whole aspect of the Hulu one, like the influencers and how our society is so, like, look at the buildup they made for these by fucking 7 people tweeting about it. Like, these famous models posting about this festival literally made thousands of people confident enough to spend thousands of dollars because they literally hashtagged a fucking word.
As they kind of explain the documentary, like, you know, they kind of like break down what it is that motivates millennials, definitely like upper class millennials. Mm. And kids are so driven by the desire to have meaningful existence, basically. And your social media presence for so many people is your identity.
Yeah.
And if you if people don't care about you online, you're basically nothing.
Yep.
And so nobody wants to like sit on the sidelines and have a boring life. They want to have an exciting life
and that's...
filled with things that are worth taking pictures of. And yep. like, and friends will be jealous over. Like they want to be the friend who everyone else wants to be like.
Mm-hmm.
And many of us are drawn to social media because we value experiences. And so seeing others experiencing things like secondhand is almost yeah. like the next best thing to actually experiencing them.
Well, that, God, I hate that statement that you just made so much. I think I get what you're saying. I don't subscribe to that.
Certainly not everybody at all.
Not every, but you know, in the Hulu episode, somebody says like, we've always known that there's always someone cooler than you doing cooler things than you. Like people know that, but now it's in your face every day when you're scrolling through these feeds.
Yeah.
Everyone who's posting is doing something cooler than you sitting on your couch or in bed scrolling through your phone.
Yeah.
And it's in your face every day, and it's these influencers or people who have, they put it, I like that they monetize their whole identity, and like the performance of an attractive life is their job. Like that's what they do now, is just make their life seem fucking awesome. For people like you to be like, oh, man, that is fucking awesome. I love, it's like I'm there. It's like, I'm off the social media myself. It's, I don't know. It's just, it. I think the Hulu one I liked more because it really, like, jarred me. It, like, it was jarring. Is jarred a word?
Yeah.
It jarred me? It sounds strange.
Put you in a jar.
It put me in a jar, sealed it, and I was just left there to think, what the fuck is wrong with the world? Like, how do we get to this point where the influence of, like, seven super... If 15 of the world's hottest supermodels told me to go, like, I don't even know, I wouldn't fucking listen. Like, whatever they're telling me to do, I wouldn't be like, you know what, sign me up, I'm going to go spend a bunch of money and do that thing. But because of social media and hashtags and the ability for people to share and say, hey, did you see that this person commented on it? Like, people can blow pointless shit up. Oh, it's so depressing.
And so many of these kids thought, like, this is an actual step I can take towards maybe meeting these people. Like I can be in the background of these videos. I can
Emily Ratajkowski is going to be like hanging on the beach with me and my pals. Like it was such a obvious pitch. It was just seems so easy to figure out who they're targeting and what. I don't know.
Are you familiar with Maslow's hierarchy of needs?
Yes.
So basically, for anyone who's not, it's like it's a pyramid, like a psychological theory. There's like five levels. The bottom level is needs like food and water and shelter. So if you have nothing else,
yep.
that's all you can focus on is like eating and drinking and having somewhere to live. The next level above that is safety. So once you got your food and water and shelter, you want employment, you want mm-hmm. health, that kind of thing. Next level was love, like friends and family. Then esteem, which is like respect and freedom.
I thought you said then a steam. Like everyone needs a good steam every now and then. Hit the steam room.
And then the last level is self-actualization. And what that means is like it's the desire to become the most one can be. And so if once you move your way up this pyramid, you have more and more things in life. You start to question more the meaning of your life. Like, what am I? What am I going to become?
Yeah.
And so there's a demographic that fits into that. The people who have everything they need, but like want to be something meaningful. And the people who create an event like this know they're targeting people who are well off,
yep.
but who want more. And which is typically young, impressionable millennials mm-hmm. who their entire lives, they're seeing people who are living much better, more important lives than them, what they think.
Yeah.
And so those are the people who are the most susceptible to this.
Absolutely.
And like I said, this isn't the kind of thing that I personally would have fallen for, but at the same time, I get like, I understand the human desire.
Yeah.
I get what drove people to do this if they were able yeah. to.
And again, it was the marketing. I mean, the Fuck Jerry or Jerry Media guys, however you want to say it,
mm-hmm.
Did a phenomenal job in marketing it. I mean, somebody even says like they figured out how to master it or like weaponize social media.
Yeah.
And they did it in such a good way. The visual disruption of just a blank orange square on Instagram that like every celebrity was tweeting that had Firefest tagged in it. Like, What's a blank orange square? Why don't I know about the blank orange square? It made people freak out. There's one guy, and he's in both movies, which made me really happy, because after the Hulu one, I was like in love with him. He's a guy who is in a suit. His name's Calvin.
Did
Calvin
he make like the Twitter account?
Yes. The Fire Fraud? He made yeah. the Fire Fraud Twitter account, and you can tell in both of these movies, he is so fucking happy yeah. that this thing bombed. Like,
I was right.
He is like giddy, and he's my favorite person in both these movies, because he says like, I mean, if Ja Rule's tied to something, here, take my money. Like, when the fuck has he been a dependable? He had just gotten out of jail like right before he signed up to promote this fucking thing for tax fraud or something. But he also says, he says like, an island that Pablo Escobar used to own is like so sexy. And it's like a drug lord who killed like thousands and thousands of people. There's probably dead bodies all over that fucking island. Like,
yes. Like once they showed that line in the ad, like an island once owned by Pablo Escobar, I'm like, they're really marketing to people who like don't care about other morals people. Or anything. Yeah. Like, why would you sit down and be like, oh, hell yeah, I'm going to buy this.
Yeah. Probably find some blow hanging around or something. Like,
well, and then when the Oren guy from Jerry Media is like, people messaged me and were like, my parents were killed by Pablo Escobar.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, he's a real person. Like, this isn't just the guy from Narcos.
Yeah, it's
this
not
is
like
a real
cool
guy
dude.
Who did terrible things.
That's the thing. It's like, that's exactly why so many people didn't feel pity for these people who went to this festival that was pitched as like the ultimate rich boy party. I remember seeing that ad and thinking, that'd probably be pretty fun. I honestly did. Like, I was like, oh, I'd like to swim with pigs. And then I thought, oh, I don't have thousands of dollars to throw at like something that's pretty loosely outlined. And I did no more research into it at the time, thank fucking God.
Instead, you just metaphorically swim with pigs about once a week.
That's right.
And eat some food.
Correct.
Also, in the Hulu documentary, when Billy's being interviewed, the interviewer near the end says, who's guilty? Billy says, everyone.
Yeah.
And that made me so angry, because he honestly thinks that because other people played a part in making this happen, that like... he thinks everybody is to blame. He thinks that consumers are to blame for being tricked, and that everybody around him was like, maybe if they had just done their job better, it would have. Like he's still does not get
to an extent that is like unseen in any other human. I think his ability to like distance himself from it is shocking. I mean, it's amazing. I feel like he feels no guilt at all about it, and he's probably already just thinking about his next scam. Can we talk about Magnesis too?
I didn't understand it. Is it literally just a card that physically feels cool and has some perks?
That's what it was supposed to be. Like, he made a copy of his own credit card on like a metal-shaped credit card, and people were like, this is fucking sweet.
Reminds me of like the scene from American Psycho when everyone's comparing business cards. Like, who cares about what your
credit card
physically feels like unless you're just like filthy rich...
He literally got that filthy rich oil tycoon to invest in Fire strictly from that stupid little card.
Right.
Like, built a business relationship that got him millions of dollars from that. But it was the same target audience for Fyre Festival. It was like rich, wealthy kids who want to be cool and want to be in this own private club.
They
want to
be cooler than their friends who aren't part of this.
It was a black card for millennials. And it was like, yeah, we have this cool space where you can come hang out. And I'm sure it was full of just the worst people you can imagine. It's like, here's a bunch of perks. And the perks like never even worked. People said it was like a total scam. Like, they didn't... who the fuck is going to even accept a card like from a made-up company? Like, people don't have the ability to process that. It's, ugh.
The story also kind of reminded me of, like... okay, so you've seen, like, Wolf of Wall Street and Goodfellas. And, like, those movies, even though they aren't... even though Martin Scorsese isn't trying to glorify the actions of these people, you still watch those movies and think to yourself, like, yeah, that person is a really bad human being, but, like, I wish I could be more like... this. I wish I could have more charisma. I wish that I could, you know, make confident decisions. I wish I could, like, think that creatively.
Yeah.
And I found myself many times being like, this is a guy who could do incredible things if he just wasn't using his skills to scam people out of their money.
Yep.
Like, if he used his influence and his privilege to work his way up in, like, an ethical way, this guy could be, like, one of the most powerful, richest people probably in the world. But instead, he's using that to take shortcuts. And to do new schemes.
I don't even think he knows he's taking shortcuts. He just thinks shit works if you throw money at it. I think that's how he approaches everything. Like, I think the Netflix one did a good job of, like, 7 days out. Here's what's happening then.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, job site got shut down. Like, they knew it wasn't going to happen. 4 days out, like, the radio went haywire. Fuck Jerry team still, like, promoting it. 3 days out, it's described as chaos. 2 days out, it's a breakdown. 1 day left, it's like they pull an all-nighter, it's a fucking monsoon, so like all these mattresses and tents are soaking wet, and they basically just like give up, but they still have people posting about how great it's going to be. Like, they still have influencers posting, they still have the Fuck Jerry team at like that totally different resort the day before, like partying up, living it up live on a totally different island, and they're like, yeah, it's going to be like this. And it's just like, why at that point would you not be like, guys, everyone who's planning on coming here, do not do that. This is going to be a disaster if you come. Like, how do you not have the foresight to just fucking stop?
Also, another thing that makes no sense to me at all is near the end of the Netflix doc when it shows the guy's like filming Billy in his apartment,
yeah,
doing the thing where he's like trying to sell the tickets, like he's doing more scams trying, yeah, to make some money.
Yeah.
He specifically called the guy over to film this. Why?
I know.
It's like he knows that this is going to make good footage in a, yeah, documentary, but he doesn't understand that the documentary makes him look awful.
It makes him look terrible. And the Netflix thing does have like a lot of... It's very clear that Billy was not involved in the Netflix one,
mm-hmm,
because there's a lot of raw footage, because clearly he just had a video camera rolling like 100% of the time where he was promoting or planning this. Not really planning it, but partying about it. And there's so much bad, like, snuck-in footage of him. Like, we're trying to sell a pipe dream for your average loser who's living in their mom's basement. Like,
yeah, like, the video of that conversation, I was like, there's no way that anybody realizes this is being filmed right now.
Yeah.
He's very candid.
It's, a lot of it is, and it's intriguing because you see, like, that he does know what he's doing. He's aware of who he's selling to, who he's trying to get to buy these,
mm-hmm,
and he's aware that he's scamming people. Like, he just is. I think it's also very telling of, like, he gets out on bail, and he starts scamming people again with, like, this Frank Tibble ticket nonsense. Like,
yeah,
he's using the Firefest email list, which he knows is basically a big list of well-off suckers.
Of scammable people.
Scammable people.
But also people who probably learned their lesson.
You would think.
You know what I mean?
Like, but hopefully. I don't know. I really can't confirm that. And he's like, yeah, we've got tickets for, like, the Grammys and, like, all these St. Victoria's Secret fashion show and the Met Gala. And it's like, nobody sells tickets to these.
But even, like, I think it's in the Hulu one, they kind of mention how he really does try to, like, he would sell tickets to Hamilton on Broadway,
yeah,
for, like, decent prices,
yep,
and then the day of, he would have to buy, like, third-hand tickets, and,
yeah,
then he would lose money.
Yeah.
Like, all these schemes he loses on, and then he has to do a bigger scheme to pay for that
That's
scheme.
What his whole life is just paying off his last scheme with his new scheme. And it's so sad. Like, it's honestly sad.
Do you have any final thoughts before I wrap it up today?
There's so many good quotes in all these movies. Like, it's a great time to be a con man in America. Like, and scamming is the air we breathe as millennials. Like, and because we're on social media all the time, there's like, hey, here's a product you've heard people buzzing about, but this is actually a knockoff product, but you're not going to know the difference and you're going to buy this one and give money to this shady corporation. I think it's again, jarred me.
The Hulu one kind of draws a pretty heavy-handed parallel between Billy and Donald Trump.
Yeah.
But it's something that I couldn't stop thinking about when I was watching. Was,
yeah,
I'm like, what a perfect parable for our time. Like,
yeah,
this is a small story that just tells so much about where the world is at right now.
Mm-hmm. I agree 100%. I think, you know, and one thing I found interesting is I unfortunately follow Fuck Jerry on Instagram, and they are now fundraising for some of the employees on the island, or like the bartenders on the island who got screwed over so hard by this festival. They're like fundraising. And I was like, how much of that money are you going to keep? How much of that money are you going to keep? Because Billy's like trying to save the cash. He wanted to like fly down to the island and like try to bring back stuff, booze or supplies or stuff to like save as much cash as he could, which, mm-hmm, is just like so,
yeah, there's
fucking
a,
delusional.
There's like a handful of the Bahamian locals who are interviewed who like,
yep,
who lost a lot because of this. And there's a lot of people who were interviewed who like I feel for. But there's this one woman in particular,
yes,
in the Netflix,
that's one, the
one, who like,
that's the one.
It's heartbreaking what,
yep,
happened to her.
It is.
And like, Billy doesn't have to think about that stuff for a second. It doesn't affect his life.
He wouldn't.
In the slightest.
I think one of the most like fucked up moments of either of these documentaries, like this really was fucked up. He like basically asked a guy in his team to go suck a custom guy's dick. Literally prepared one of his employees to suck a dick. To,
and,
like, save the festival.
And, like, I thought for sure that he's speaking in metaphor.
I,
like,
did, too. But
like he's, and I think
the
guy who's telling the story also thought that at first. Like, he's like, oh, you want me to go schmooze this guy? Like, no.
Literally.
Give this guy a blowjob so
was,
he will let us have our water?
And they're in it, like, they show the guy, and it's like, you can almost watch him, like, have this realization of, like, I was ready to do that. Like, for this festival. That's how devoted some people were to this. I was ready to do that. And it's like, he just has... Billy has, like, almost like a mind control power, it seems like. Like, he can get people to agree to these things that they never would normally, just, yeah, because he's either charming or... I don't know
he's
what that power is.
Just influential in a number of ways, yeah.
Oh, man. It is such a crazy story. And I'm so glad, like, there's two documentaries about it. I wish there were three. In all honesty,
I'm sure
Amazon,
there will be. I'm
get
sure
on
there
it.
Will be more.
But it's just mind-blowing. And I am very excited to see when he gets out of prison what he's going to jump into. Because you know he's going to get right back to it. What else is he going
to
do?
I hope that the judge orders him to, like, before he enters any kind of business deal with somebody, they have to watch both these documentaries.
Yes. Yes.
Speaking of leaving him fucked, these jalapenos are doing a number on my body, so I think we should cut this off now. You can find all our episodes on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Anchor.fm, Stitcher, or wherever else you find your podcasts. And if you like what you hear and you want to support the show, you can leave us a review on whatever podcast platform you're listening on.
Mm-hmm.
Or grab some of your very own Fast Food Film Friends merch at fastfoodfilmfriends.com.
Yeah, get it. That's what I say to people.
You say, get it. It only costs like $5.
That's right. Also, feel free to follow us on Instagram at Fast Food Film Friends or Facebook. Twitter, we're at FFFF Podcast. Or email us at fastfoodfilmfriends@gmail.com to let us know, you know, what we should be doing next, watching or eating.
How much spicier do you want us to get?
I do not want to get any spicier.
Drop us a line.
I'm going to go drop something right now, I'll tell you that much.
Until then,
farewell.
Hey guys, this is Nathan and Kevin. We're coming at you from Red Robin.
What up?
We've been stuck here for like almost 2 days now. So we flew in and like as soon as we got here, we were like, this is not at all what we were expecting.
No, like totally. There's like tents and shit set up in the parking lot.
There's a lot of people here. Everyone's like what is going on right now? Like this is not what looked like on the website.
This is not what the website looked like. Definitely, like not at all.
Yeah, it's like it's kind of like chill though. Like, so, like would you say like sort of?
Yeah, for sure. But like also like we have no idea how we're gonna get home because like they canceled all the flights and like we don't really have any money left anyway.
Yeah, so we're thinking about like launching a GoFundMe, pay for our Uber ride back home. It's like a 13-hour drive. And the surge rates are like not going down, it looks like. So, like, yeah, people are Instagram for a link to that.
Peep the gram for sure. Like, we tried calling my dad, but he's, like, not being helpful at all. He's all pissed that I used his, like, CC to buy our plane tickets to get out here in the first place.
Yeah, which, I mean, like, I get it, but, like, he should definitely chill out.
Chill out, Dad. It's, like, he's being a total dick, like he can be sometimes, but whatever.
So we were, like, in, like, the meantime, we were, like, just gonna, like, maybe, like, watch some movies on my phone here. Maybe, like, order some grub. I don't know.
Yeah, and I think we could record ourselves talking about it.
Yeah, for sure. Oh shit, my mom just pulled up outside actually.
Oh sweet.
Yeah, I'm gonna peace out. I'll catch you later.
Do you think
bro.
I could get a wrap? Okay. Alright, so this is Kevin coming to you live from like Red Robin.